Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter since 1987, and editor of PWTorch.com, MMATorch.com, and the newly relaunched PWPodcasts.com, featuring written reports and newsworthy quotes uttered by wrestling personalities with in-depth recaps of wrestling personality-hosted podcasts. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, updated every day. And it might be your next favorite pro wrestling website. Another thing that you may want to take advantage of is a $1 sale. We have our VIP membership sale going on, the first one since January, a chance for you to get in with a 90% off discount for 1 month. If you sign up this week, get 90% off a VIP subscription. You can get details at pwtorch.com right now. That's pwtorch.com. There's a headline right there with full details on it. Or you can jump right to pwtorch.com/govip. Click on the order form and enter coupon code MAYDOLLAR. That's MAYDOLLAR. And that will give you $9 off a $10 subscription. Now, you can also apply that $9 discount to a 3-month or 1-year subscription if you want to dive in for more. This offer is open to current members and former members. We'd love to have you back. If it's been a while, you'll like some of the changes. And one thing we added this weekend was a new show from Sean Radican, which I'll talk about later in the show, that we're getting a lot of good feedback on. But first, we're here to talk about Monday Night Raw. And I invite you, the listener, who is listening to us live, don't do this if you're not listening right now at 11 Eastern. It's just after Raw went off the air. But big episode of Raw. Not only a pretty big main event, Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins against Bray Wyatt and Samoa Joe, but massive matches announced for next week. Seth Rollins versus Roman Reigns one-on-one. And Samoa Joe, and you know joke's coming here, so if you saw the show, so hold tight, it's coming. It's predictable, but it's coming. Samoa Joe versus Bray Wyatt versus Finn Balor, according to Kurt Angle, who doesn't know how to pronounce the name of Finn Balor, which was a little embarrassing. But anyway, those are two big main events for next week. WWE trying to pop a rating on Memorial Day. They're not giving up. They're going for it, so I guess credit to them. Hey, it's a 5-way match. You're not really giving away anything that you aren't going to get in the Fatal 5-Way match the following Sunday in terms of matchups. But still, those are two big matches to give away next week. All five wrestlers who are in the Fatal 5-Way will be against each other in a one-on-one or one-on-one-on-one match next Monday on Raw. So a big story there. Let's talk about that. If you want to sprinkle in some conversation about what happened last night with Jinder Mahal. Usually we try to stick to just Raw, but certainly I'm open to a little discussion on that too, if you'd like, and a little on NXT TakeOver. Not to get too far ahead of ourselves, we got the midweek flagship coming up on Wednesday where we'll hit a lot of topics, but feel free to sound off a little bit on that too. But the more we stick to Raw, I guess the better, since that is kind of the rule around here usually. Our phone number, 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. Also on the show, we had Alexa Bliss beat Mickie James in 3 minutes. Mickie James just seems to be getting buried right now. I saw what Jason Powell wrote over at ProWrestling.net on this, and I totally agree. I was looking for his take. I mean, Mickie James had a lot more that she could have given, or they could have gotten a lot more out of her than they are. Breaking up Bliss and James prematurely, not really capitalizing on it, and then having just a quick win for Alexa here. It's disappointing. I really think they left money on the table with her. Austin Aries beat Tony Nese in the obligatory third-hour cruiserweight match. Matt Hardy beat Sheamus and revealed that their tag match, the winner got to pick the stipulation for their tag match at Extreme Rules. Matt Hardy revealed it would be a cage match, the Hardys against Sheamus and Cesaro. Kalisto beat Apollo Crews, Titus O'Neil coaching Apollo and yapping at him, and a little dissension there, but Kalisto ends up going over as a result. Alicia Fox took on Sasha Banks in a rubber match from their one-on-one battles in recent weeks. Sasha wins this one in about 2 minutes, but they did an angle afterwards that indicated this feud is not over. Finn Balor beat Karl Anderson, no surprise there, in about 7 minutes. And continuing to work our way backwards through the show here, Elias Sampson made his debut and defeated Dean Ambrose in his Raw debut, but it was by DQ when Miz interfered, strategically stomping, not all that hard, Elias Sampson, causing the ref to thus disqualify Dean Ambrose, which I think did more to expose the ridiculousness of WWE rules than it did put heat on Miz or Sampson, but it was not a big deal. And then Akira Tozawa beat Aria Divari in the second match on the show. And in the opener, Roman Reigns beat Bray Wyatt by DQ in 5 minutes when Joe attacked Bray from behind to get even for last week. That led to an angle with Seth Rollins running out for the save, and they ended up doing a Kurt Angle announced the tag match main event, and so we got that main event later. Beginning of the show, the very beginning, was a Bray Wyatt promo, Roman Reigns interrupting, and they went back and forth a little bit, leading into an impromptu one-on-one match between them that Kurt Angle announced from the stage. So there's the gist of what happened on the episode. Goldust also cut a good promo, kind of reestablishing the Goldust gimmick and setting up a match with R-Truth, but I thought he carried himself in a way that suggests he might have a run in him at least like the IC title level. I mean, with what he did, I think there's an IC title level character there. Certainly in his in-ring work is there. He's got good size. He's in great shape. You know, he's in his late 40s, but he doesn't wrestle like it. So I'm for it. Oh, and they did an angle where Enzo got attacked by a mystery person backstage. So a lot of stuff going on in the show that we can talk about. And why don't we go ahead and talk about it right now and start with Jay from Tampa. Jay, you're first up tonight. What's on your mind coming out of tonight's Raw?
Hey, Wade, before I start on Raw, I just had one comment about Backlash with gender.
Sure.
I was just thinking about when I was watching it last night. Do you think, how do you feel about whether gender was a filler for what they wanted to do with Rusev? Or do you think that that's totally separate? It's just kind of interesting how, you know, Rusev and gender was in a little spot for a while, and what they did with them. And now that Rusev is on the shelf and he teased about coming back, and now it's just weird how he was like Jinder was his lackey a little bit. Now when he does come back, potentially tomorrow night, Jinder is going to be the world champion. So it's interesting to see what they do with them. But I did want to get your comment on, do you think that Jinder was a filler for what they wanted to do with Rusev on SmackDown?
I think that the reason Jinder is world champion right now is they want to make big inroads into India. And, you know, 1.4 or 1.6 billion people, whatever population number Jinder quoted last night, is indicative of why he's getting the push. Now, they won't give it to just anybody. He had to impress them behind the scenes with his professionalism, his dedication, a good attitude. He did all that, and he had to get his body in shape, and he did that too. I don't think he's given us main event promos yet that are at the level of Rusev. He hasn't given us matches that at a similar point when Rusev was moving up the roster, Rusev was giving really good matches, having really good matches with a lot of people. In fact, he and Roman Reigns had some really good matches at house shows where Rusev was credited for bringing Roman along. So to me, Jinder Mahal's push, while being grouped with Rusev, I think in retrospect, was priming him for a push. The possible push in India, I don't know that Vince McMahon had it in mind that he's going to have him win the world title. But I don't think he had plans to give Rusev the world title instead of Jinder if Rusev hadn't gone down with an injury. I do think that it would have been better for Jinder to not, as you said, Jay, come across as a lackey to Rusev. I think they could have done a better job making it seem like Jinder was, you know, rising through the ranks and not just the weak link in that duo. But all that said, I think it is an underreported aspect of the situation, which is Jinder and Rusev were aligned. Rusev's been gone, and now he's coming back. How will he react to Jinder in the top spot? And I'm curious about that because they do have a history. They might ignore it. Maybe Vince doesn't want it to be part of the storyline. He wants to forget they were together and do something completely separate with Rusev. But it's also possible that'll be an integral part of the storyline. But if you're asking, do I think Rusev would be champion now if he didn't get hurt, or was he, you know, was that where they were headed? I don't think so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, my second thing was about Raw. It just seemed like although I felt like it was a full Raw, I liked the matchups. They felt really fresh, and I was really engaged in the main event as well as the first matchup. It seemed like they are giving away a lot of matches, and maybe because they want to spike the ratings. But my question was about the attack on Enzo. For some reason, I feel like they're going to make it a twist where they make it where Cass attack Enzo, even though we never found out who attacked Hideo or Tommy. So sometimes those things get kind of left. Yeah. Hopefully this leads to something. I think that will be the most refreshing as far as their gimmick kind of getting played, in my opinion. You think they might put a spin on it where Vince is ready to go forward with Big Cass, or you think they're going to leave Cass kind of stick with Enzo for another year?
That is intriguing. I have to admit, I didn't think of that. However, what struck me is how Cass was being kind of a jerk to the referees who were tending to Enzo, and he told Kurt Angle sternly. I thought, in a way, that made Cass look like he wasn't. I didn't think he looked heroic. I mean, I understand your quote, friend is hurt. You're coming to his defense. You're emotional. But he says, you better find out who did this before I do or else. And it's like, well, how about you just both work together and whoever finds out first, congratulations, and then you can take out the revenge. I thought if Cass isn't turning heel, I thought he came across heelish. But it is kind of intriguing. What if they decide they're going to give Cass a heel singles push? And this was, you know, the mystery angle for that. That's intriguing, Jay. I don't know that they're ready to do that, but I've got to say, the edge that Cass showed in coming to Enzo's defense, if it's unintentional, that's not good. But if it's intentional, I think he showed some good. He showed that maybe he'd be a decent heel, because I thought he kind of came across that way. So that's an interesting theory. I got to chew on that a little bit.
All right. Well, cool. Thank you so much, Wade. You have a great one.
Thanks, Jay. Thanks for kicking off the show like that. All right, let's. Okay, a lot of callers lined up. Appreciate that, especially when I don't have a co-host. That means more time for callers, and we will have time for a lot of callers when we get back right after this message. Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar, as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the livecast. Thank you. All right, we are back. I talked at the top of the show about a new VIP feature that I'm really excited about. I'm excited to be a listener of this program. I'm not participating in it. But Sean Radican, longtime Torch staffer and columnist who specializes, he watches WWE, but he specializes in covering some of the smaller groups and New Japan now. And he is going to do a show. We're not sure if it's going to be every week yet. I'm hoping so. I'm pushing him for it. But more weeks than not, he's going to do a weekend show that's called WWE Future Past. Now, it's a play on words a little bit, but what the format is he's spending 15 minutes with a co-host who is also passionate and informed. And he's got a variety of co-hosts lined up who are passionate and informed on watching a ton of matches of wrestlers who are not on the radar yet or working their way up the indie ranks to earn a reputation, who might be future WWE stars like Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, Finn Balor, pick your guy, on and on. And so the first episode debuted Sunday. And the format is going to be, And Sean and I talked about this last couple months, and we finally got it rolling. There's going to be three wrestlers. Two of them are going to be wrestlers who are on the indie scene, not in WWE or even developmental. And there's going to be a third wrestler who is a current top star, who's well-known, and they're going to talk about his history in the company. Now, they're going to run out of top stars eventually and probably go to three prospects. But for now, they're going to do a top star. So he did Kevin Owens, and he and co-host this week, Mike Rowe, who's been a contributor to PW Torch for 15 years, also off and on. Mike's great on audio with Sean. They've done a lot of audio together. And they talked about Kevin Owens. They talked about his roots. They talked about what they thought of him contemporaneously as he moved up the ranks. Where did he improve? Where did he need to improve? And are they surprised at where he landed? And then they talked about Kyle O'Reilly, last seen in Ring of Honor, an up-and-coming wrestler. Does he have what it takes to become an NXT or main roster wrestler? Is it cruiserweight? Is it heavyweight? Is it tag team? They talk about his background and the pros and cons, the strengths and weaknesses of him as a WWE prospect. And then Jay White, who made a real impression last Friday on the ROH War of the Worlds pay-per-view, who earned a reputation in Japan and now expanded that to the ROH audience on that pay-per-view and opened up a few eyes. They talked about him. Now, if you haven't heard of him or you're not real familiar with him, in 15 minutes, Sean and Mike gave his background, talked about his strengths, his weaknesses, and does he have good odds to make it. I think it's a great concept for a show, and Sean is the right person to execute it, and I'm looking forward to listening and learning from Sean and his co-hosts every week. And a cool feature is there's links on the VIP site where we post the audio show. Now, all VIP audios are available on iPhone and Android and iTunes. You can subscribe and stream there. But as a supplement to their show, there's a post on the VIP website with matches, one match from each wrestler. So there's a Kevin Owens vintage indie match, there's a Jay White indie match, and there's a Kyle O'Reilly match. And they're available free on YouTube, and there's links to them. They talk about those matches and where each wrestler was in their career and why they picked that match and why it stood out. So you can watch these matches and then get expert analysis and commentary and perspective on this match and where it fits into their progress and their journey, either to make it to WWE or the journey that landed them in WWE. So that's a new feature just about every week, WWE Future Past, hosted by Sean Radican, an exciting new VIP audio show. So check that out. Also, starting last week, I started doing five-day-a-week afternoon news updates. So instead of doing 2, 3, 4 news updates a week, kind of scattered throughout at the week, usually recorded at night, I'm doing afternoon news updates. I'm not sure I'll do them every single day, but so far I have since last Monday. So on your drive time, on your drive home from work, I spend the day catching up on wrestling news and conveying it to you in audio format. So as soon as you get in the car or get on the subway, you can download the latest Wade Keller Hotline and catch up on the news over the last 24 hours. That's in addition to my in-depth reviews of Raw and SmackDown. So, and the Ask the Editor feature, which will probably mainly be on weekends now, but I'll throw some in during weekdays too for Wade Keller Hotline double shots. So, all that said, that's just the new stuff. You can find out everything that comes with the VIP membership. Nearly 30 years of archives, over 1,500 back issues of the weekly Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter dating back to the late 1980s. All kinds of stuff if you're a regular listener you've heard me talk about. Over a dozen VIP audio shows per week, in addition to ad-free versions of this live cast. And so much more. Full details over at pwtorch.com/govip. When you get to the sign-up form, there's a place for a promo code or a coupon code. Enter MAYDOLLAR, MAYDOLLAR, two L's, by the way. I want you to get your $9 off. So MAYDOLLAR, and after the whole, or MAYDALLAR, if Kurt Angle was selling it to you. And enter MAYDOLLAR, and you get $9 off one of any of the three VIP subscriptions. That brings a one-month $10 sub down to $1. It's a great opportunity. Our first sale since January. You don't know when the next one will be. Take advantage of it now. Get on board for a busy month ahead. That's MAYDOLLAR, one word, no space, when you go to pwtorch.com/govip. Thank you for indulging me on that. And seriously, I think if you enjoy the show, for a dollar, give it a shot. We walk you through how to sign up to the VIP feed on popular podcast apps. We have step-by-step instructions. If you're not real technical, the page to go to is pwtorchvip.com/VIP tips. And that gives you a really good overview of everything that comes with the VIP membership and how to find it, where to navigate, so you don't miss out on anything. We make it really easy to dive right in, whether it's 1,500 back issues, you want to look up certain matches, pay-per-views, big stories from the late 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, or last year. They're all there, one or two clicks away, along with our entire, what are we going on now, 12-plus years of VIP audio shows. I don't know how many it is, but it's like billions of hours of audio for you as soon as you sign up, and new stuff every week. So check that out. All right, back to the phone lines. Let's go to Sean in Chicago up next. Sean, thanks for holding. What's on your mind tonight after Raw?
Oh, I'm glad to see the old Goldust back.
I
really
too.
Am. He's an underrated big man, you know. You got Undertaker, Kane, and then actually I think you got Goldust right there. I mean, I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer because his title runs and stuff, but good to see him back and then going all in, because I've been wanting to see old Goldust for a while, because I think he's a really strong character that they need.
I think Goldust let me jump in, Sean. I think Goldust will be a Hall of Famer, yeah. But I think what they're about to do with him, I hope, removes any doubt that he belongs. Because I think some people might see him as borderline in the sense that he hasn't really been in a meaningful match in years. I mean, I don't say that to be mean, but I think it's true. There's not really a meaningful match storyline-wise or memorable in terms of being a single showcase. And he can do so much better. He's in his late 40s. He wrestles like he's in his mid-30s. He's in the best shape of his life. That's not just a thing people say. It's true. And he's super smart, super respected, not creating problems. He's cleaned up his act. He's really good on promos. He knows that character. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does. This is kind of that last chapter, and I'm really excited for it. So I'm rooting for him. I think he was already a Hall of Famer, but not a headliner and not a co-headliner. You know, a third from the top guy. Those people go in who put in their time. Being part of the Rhodes family legacy helps too. But I think if this turns into a good run, I think he could be an IC title level guy if this goes well. And I'm kind of hoping that that's what happens. Sean, go ahead.
I think if you put him against the right guy, if Roman Reigns was actually down the card where he should be, him and Roman Reigns will be great because they pull a lot of good stuff out of each other. And I think if you got Jinder Mahal getting the belt, I think you could put it on Goldust for a little bit. It wouldn't hurt you, but I think they should have done that back when it was him and Undertaker and Kane. But I like what they did with the Drifter. They protected him really well.
Yeah.
And it was a cheap victory, yeah, but they gave it to him. And he looked strong against Dean Ambrose. So you can even throw him in the IC title picture if you keep him that strong.
I thought they were going to put him in a Kurt Hawkins role. I thought he'd play his guitar or Aiden English. I thought he's going to be a guy who played his guitar, annoyed people, sang a little out of tune, and was self-indulgent and boorish, and then Dean would come in and kick his ass, and that would be his shtick. They protected him. They have higher hopes for him. We're learning it doesn't hurt to have big trapezius muscles if you want to get a push in 2017, and he's got those. So, he's got a good look. I thought he looked solid against Dean Ambrose. He's still green, but I don't think he looked like he was nervous or didn't belong in there. So, yeah, I'm curious to see where they go. I like, you know, they're throwing the word new era around more, and I like that they're kind of backing that up. I think that they're, you know, with the push of Jinder Mahal, say what you will about it, but, I mean, it's factually speaking, he's a guy who wasn't on top a year ago or 6 months ago, and now he is, and you've got some new guys from NXT. Dash and Dawson should be in that mix, but, there's a nice mix of new talent that are freshening things up, and on the flip side, Goldust is in a new era, but boy, is he the right guy to have on that roster as a heel, working with some of the newer baby faces to just bring them along too. You know, I mean, he would.
Exactly.
Goldust can help bring people along. Although I want him to be against higher end guys for now. I don't want him to just be the veteran working with rookies to make them better. I think they can make some money with him in the next few months.
I think him and Seth Rollins can even do something. If he was in stuff with The Undertaker and Kane during the Attitude Era, I think you could just have him go up against top guys, because that's what he was doing.
Yeah.
And they kind of jump straight through that. I hope he just destroys R-Truth, because I'm sick of R-Truth. They didn't give him the belt for that month. They should have before he became the Awesome Truth.
Mm-hmm.
He really should have got the belt that one time. Really should have got it. But keeping with the new era, Apollo Crews, I couldn't stand him, but they actually, you know, they put him with Titus, and now he's got a mouthpiece, and I care about his character more now.
Yep.
I care whether or not he's going to side with Titus, or he seems to be siding with him. He seems like he might be turning heel, but you never know.
Yep. No, I agree with you. I mean, they're doing things that make you interested in characters that they weren't even giving the time of day to prior to the roster split or prior to WrestleMania, when, you know, the big special attraction part-time stars are dominating television. They found themselves with all this TV time to fill, and they looked around and said, we got to make the best of what we have. And I give them credit for doing that. You know, I mean, I give them credit for making an obvious concerted effort to get more out of certain guys, not just call up new guys, but or bring back, you know, old guys. They're making the best of guys like Goldust and doing more with Apollo and Jinder and on and on. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, even Breezango, you know, come to mind. They tried to do something more with the Colognes, and they seemed to lose interest in that pretty quick. But Breezango, they didn't. You know, Breezango, they're giving more TV time too. Not everything's going to work out, but I like in general the philosophy, and I think May is the right time to do it. You know, you're out of WrestleMania season, but you're before SummerSlam season. See if some people catch on.
And my last thing was, I wonder what you thought about that Paul Heyman promo when he was talking to Finn Balor. It was yeah, very different. He didn't come in there. He didn't cut him down. He didn't even seem like Paul Heyman typically. He just felt like he was actually talking to Finn Balor, which was a little weird. I thought that might be some promo they would cut for Roman Reigns, because that's the guy that won at the top. I wonder why they let Paul Heyman cut that promo with Finn Balor and said, you know, hey, I want to see you win. I mean, was he just talking to him in front of us, knowing he wasn't or something? Or like, well, I want to see you at WrestleMania instead of Roman Reigns, but this is what we're going to get. I don't know what he really meant by doing that. And I wonder if he might even be in trouble for that. Like, they may try to bury Finn Balor a little bit, but it looked like they weren't at the end of the show. Like, they were boosting him up more. I want to get your take on what they might be doing with Finn Balor.
Absolutely, Sean. Yeah. Oh, I think what they wanted to do, my guess is they were a little insecure about Finn Balor's promos, and they were a little insecure about where he stands right now with the WWE fan base. And they didn't want to wait until after Memorial Day for Brock Lesnar, or, you know, deep into June for Brock, to actually make an appearance, even if it's just through, you know, to have Brock or Heyman represented in this feud. So by having Heyman come in Chicago and address Balor, but also talk about the other four in that match, it helped cement the match as a big deal. It helped lay out, it was a lay of the land by Heyman about each of the guys and how he feels, and how he feels represents Lesnar's feelings. And I think, you know, it's sort of, you know, every Rey Mysterio promo, when he stood in the middle of the ring, it seemed like he'd get interrupted a minute in, because they didn't trust Rey to cut a promo. Balor even misspoke, you know, at the beginning, calling it a final way instead of he called it a final five way instead of a fatal five way. And then it was kind of funny, because he goes, oops, and kind of smiled.
Yeah, he said, oops.
It was kind
of
funny.
The crowd didn't lay into him.
No, because they respect
him. The crowd let him do it.
Yeah.
So I was okay with it.
Yeah, exactly. He's human, and they respect him, and it wasn't that big of a, you know, that big of a thing. It wasn't like he messed up his script. It was just he got the name of the match wrong. I mean, that can happen to anybody. So, but I think what they wanted to do was have Heyman speak for Balor, to make Balor seem like a candidate who can win, and to put some wind under his sails. I mean, I came away, it almost feels like telegraphing now that Balor's going to win. I still vote for Bray. I think Bray's the best opponent. But it so much of the decisions that Vince makes, you can't judge till a month or two later to kind of see the lay of the land and where he was going. But I think Bray is the most, has the least to lose by going in there with Brock and looking good but losing. And I don't want Joe or Balor to lose to Brock, but I think Brock needs to look strong and dominate before he fights Braun Strowman, presumably at SummerSlam. So I maybe Vince thinks, if it's Balor, and we have, you know, weeks to talk about this, but if he thinks Balor's the right guy, maybe he thinks a match with Balor and Brock can, quote, make Balor in the eyes of WWE fans. Maybe he thinks if Balor, even in losing, can hold his own and put up a great fight, that, and get a really good match out of Brock, that can help move Balor to the level that AJ's at. And maybe he has that in mind. And if Brock is willing to do that, then that's fine. But Brock has to be willing. I mean, Roman Reigns talked to Chris Jericho in March on his podcast about, you know, Brock's tough. He doesn't always want to do very much. You know, it's tough to talk him into doing stuff. Dean Ambrose, you know, essentially said that in the interview on the WWE Network. You know, I had all these ideas, and Brock wasn't receptive to them. So, you know, if whoever Brock faces, I think you got to make sure Brock is willing to play the game. I definitely don't want to see Brock just squash Balor. But I was intrigued by the whole thing. They have me interested in a number of the possibilities. I don't think there's any, well, I shouldn't say any chance, but I don't think there's much of a chance at all that Seth wins. It just doesn't feel like that's time.
I really do think that Balor might win because Balor has the ultimate protection and he has an alter ego because he's almost like two wrestlers. He's not the demon. Brock could easily just face Finn, regular old Finn Balor, but it's different when he wears the makeup and he becomes the demon because then that guy, you don't have to have lose, but you're going to have Finn Balor lose any match, which I see they kind of done a few times, you know, a couple times, with like Roman Reigns. It kind of didn't matter. I just like went, oh, okay, well, that's not the demon. It's not like he lost in full costume. He did that, I think, against Samoa Joe or I think it was Samoa Joe once, and that was it. Even Nakamura didn't beat him when he was the demon. So I don't know. I mean, he can win and still be protected because it wouldn't be Brock facing Finn Balor at his best.
Sean, appreciate your call very much. Good observations and insights. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yep, you bet.
Have a good one.
Got to get to my bottom of the hour break a little bit late here. When we come back, more calls. So if you're on hold, stay on hold, and we'll try to get to as many of you as we can here on the show. We'll be back right after this. We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. All right, we're back live. This is Wade Keller, and this is the post-Raw edition of the PW Torch livecast. I'll be by tomorrow night after SmackDown, and then Wednesday with the midweek flagship at 1 Eastern, and then Thursday at 1 Eastern for Interview Thursday. And then Thursday night, we're on the air live. It'll be Andrew Socek joining Mike McMahon to talk about Impact Wrestling as soon as that show goes off the air on Pop TV Thursday night. They're on the air taking your calls and conversing about the state of Impact Wrestling. And then Friday, Rich Fan and Bruce Mitchell, I think, will be together for Primetime Friday. It's been a mix of different hosts and co-hosts, but Bruce and Rich are always great together, and I think they'll be together on Friday's show. Jason from Australia, a caller in this program, joined Bruce last Friday for his first full hour as a co-host of the program. So if you've been a fan of the calls and contributions of Jason from Australia, check out last Friday's live cast. Some good stuff there. Kevin Eck, ex-WWE creative team member, joined me on Interview Thursday last week. Those are always highly sought-after programs. Kevin Eck's take on the current scene and anecdotes and insights into his time, his years in WWE on the creative team during the CM Punk years is always highly anticipated. And then two Thursdays ago, Sean Waltman joined me, X-Pac, on Interview Thursday. So if you happen to be away for any reason and missed some of the shows, there's some good interviews you'll want to catch up on. And as always, you can find those over at pwtorchlivecast.com or become a VIP member for just $1. The sale won't last long. It's our first sale since January. We just announced it last night. Take advantage of it. Don't delay. Don't forget about it. This is a good time to do it. We've got some rapid-fire pay-per-views coming up. We've got the new Sean Radican audio show and the new afternoon news update for me Monday through Friday, which provides you with a news update on your way home from work if you're in the United States or first thing when you wake up if you're in another part of the world. However it lines up, check it out. The coupon code, again, if you forgot to jot it down, is MAYDOLLAR. Now, that might indicate this sale ends at the end of May, so you might want to act now. $1 gets you a whole month, but you can apply that $9 discount to a 3-month or 1-year subscription too, if you want to dive in longer, because those are cheaper rates on a monthly basis if you pay in advance for 3 months or 1 year. But May Dollar gets you $9 off a 1-month, 3-month, or 1-year sub. Go to pwtorch.com/govip to become a member. All right, back to the phone lines we go. Let's go to Sam calling from California. Sam, welcome back to the live cast.
Hey, thanks. Wait, can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can.
Thanks for taking my call. I had just a couple comments that I wanted to say and a question then about Raw, and I have one backlash that I got to get in. First thing I want to bring up is about the cruiserweights at Raw, and I hear you talk about this a lot, saying that, you know, they just need one of those stars. They need someone to kind of run away with it.
Yeah.
And I think the cruiserweights right now, it's the worst thing they have going. And it shouldn't be, because I remember in the WCW days, that was the greatest part of WCW was the cruiserweights. And it's like, I feel like an easy solution for them to, like, get the, you know, like, kind of what you're talking about would be for Kalisto and Enzo to strictly just be cruiserweights. Like, do you think that would be enough to kind of get the cruiserweights going, or at least give some people with some, I don't know, your thoughts on that first?
Yeah, no, I don't think those would be enough. To me, I have been, and probably more than the average person, a big fan of Kyle O'Reilly. I think Kyle O'Reilly could come in and be that there's a little bit of Mikey Whipwreck and a little bit of AJ Styles with him. Like, he's really flashy. When he wrestles, the thing that AJ always had going for him is he looked tough, and he looked like he could take a beating and sell and get sympathy. I say maybe even better than AJ, just from a body language, facial expression standpoint. But his offense looks good, but there's an earnestness to him. And then there's sort of that underdog aspect that Mikey Whipwreck had. So to me, you need to have a personality you can build around, and somebody who has not been defined down. Now, you can have a whole list of candidates.
But wouldn't Enzo and Kalisto help?
They would help. I don't think that.
Do you think they would ever do that?
My point is that they're not enough. But I do think that they would help.
Not enough, bro.
Right? And I think Enzo is probably ultimately better as a manager. I don't know that he's going to keep up really well with the style that you would need the cruiserweights to have in any particular way. So. But, I mean, Kalisto, thing with Kalisto is I think he's been defined down a little bit also the way he's been used. So he can contribute more than, say, Arya Daivari in terms of fan perception, but you can't build around him after he's been around and you know, just losing on the main card like he has been.
Right, I guess. And I think but that would be a potential storyline right there, because he's been losing so much. You know, move him down a weight, just like any fighter would realistically in boxing or MMA. Yeah. Obviously, you know, Kalisto would never be in the ring with someone like Braun Strowman, but, you know, you get where I'm going with that.
Yep.
The next thing I want to bring up, because I want to make sure I get him in, and it's like the Mickey James comment you said about them just like leaving money on the table. I feel like this is what they do, and I feel like they did this with the Dudleys as well. Like, you know, and maybe I'm just, you know, old school, and I would love to see the Dudleys. Like, I think the Dudleys were one tag team, you know, or one tag title ran away from, like, breaking the record, and I thought for sure they were going to give it to them. Why else were you mentioning it? You know, and it's like they kind of gave them that pop the same way they gave Mickey James, you know, Asuka, you know, to come, and then after that, it was done. It was like they had no faith in them outside of that initial promo video. It's like WWE is so, WWE is all about a promo video. Which is like, are we for the next 6 months going to relive Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns like every Monday night until Braun comes back? Because it's like, again, this week they aired that package.
We might.
You know? Okay.
They consider it a big deal. Let me say this. There are things that happen behind the scenes sometimes that we don't know about. And I don't have insight into whether that happened with the Dudleys or Mickey James. Sometimes it can come out later. And there could just be, you know, people working with them in the ring or people who try to deal with them behind the scenes and they fall out of favor a little bit. So I don't know what it is with Mickey. I thought they definitely could have gotten more with what Bully Ray has been able to do on the microphone and TNA, what he showed. Mickey James, very disappointed in what they've done with her.
Agreed, 100%. And I get it. Like, I work in sports management, so it's like you – just because you have talent doesn't mean I get the whole politics thing. All right, last thing I want to bring up, and it's about backlash.
Yeah.
And just two things. Like, one, the Nakamura, huge disappointment. I knew it was going to be. It shouldn't have been with someone like Dolph Ziggler, but, you know, they just, that's just what WWE does. You know, once again, they're probably more concerned with the promo videos than they were the actual match. And then, you know, the one thing I would say about the Randy Jinder Mahal match was, like, I was obviously curious to see where it was going to go. I didn't see that coming. I think everything you said, it's all about India and them reaching out there, you know, what that previous caller said. I think if anything, Rusev, they try to make Rusev a baby face if he comes back against Jinder. But the one thing I will say that I liked about the Randy Jinder match was right towards the end, you kind of started to get that feel where it was like the entire show was going to climax. You know, like, it just got real exciting, and it was right around the time when, you know, Randy destroyed the Singh brothers. And that's the way it should be. You know, like, did you feel that at all? Like, did it kind of get to the point where it's like, okay, where is this going to go? At least I felt that. And it's like, in the modern day, we can't look at pay-per-views the way we used to. Like, it's done. You know, it's, I think they're going to get to the point where, really, the four pay-per-views are, you know, are the four big shows. And, you know, the rest of these are just a step up in, like, a Monday Night Raw or SmackDown. But anyways, that's what I thought about last night's match.
Sean, appreciate it. Yeah, I thought that Jinder, excuse me, I had to sneeze. Jinder and Randy, I thought, had a nice a peak at the end. And I thought that the timing, there's some background noise there, the timing and the cadence of building up to that was good, but I think part of what made it seem like we're coming to a crescendo is the fact that it was pretty deliberately paced for most of the match, and then, you know, the Singh brothers get involved, and you start seeing some of the big moves being signaled for. I mean, it's just, there's a certain cadence to a Randy Orton-style match where you kind of know where they're going. I mean, I had a feeling, an inkling that, more than a feeling or inkling, that Jinder had a really good chance to come out of that with the title based on, you know, the desire to open up the India market and really the sense that you're not losing a lot by Randy not being champion. And, I mean, I've talked to wrestlers about it since last night who watched the match. And, I mean, nobody's even, you know, some people talk about Randy being the greatest ever or, you know, one of the all-time greats. Ric Flair's huge on Randy Orton. I don't know if Rick's watched a lot of Randy Orton matches the last 8 years, but Randy's had some moments, but he doesn't get out of second gear very often. And, you know, his body's vulnerable with all the years of wear and tear, but he just doesn't come across like he's all that emotionally invested. And, you know, and I don't know. I think everybody kind of realized Randy as the top guy, you're not missing out. You're not sacrificing anything big if he's not champion. I think Jinder being champion is it jars some people into paying attention because things are happening that are unexpected, and in a way that can be good. Obviously, the benefit of having somebody who has the lineage from India when you're trying to go into the India market is good, for sure. I just wish, as we talked about with Jay earlier in the show, that they had done more to establish Jinder as a credible force in the ring than seeming to be the designated jobber hanging out with Rusev. And I wish that they had done more to underline and underscore, hey, this guy's making a resurgence. He's having a surge in his career, the first one, really. So all that booking aspect was missing. But in the end, I think Jinder Mahal reminds me of Al Perez, to pull a name out of the mid-1980s. Al Perez was in World Class Championship Wrestling, and he was managed by Gary Hart, and he looked the part. He was a good athlete. Not a great athlete, but a good athlete. Tall, looked like a star, could cut a pretty good promo, and could have a pretty good match, but never more than that. And he just wasn't a guy you could build around and sell tickets. And I'm worried that Jinder is another Al Perez, if we want to go back, you know, 30 years in the in wrestling history. That's the closest comparison I can come up with. And I think that's not good. You know, I think he's got to step up. And what I'm hoping for is that the next feud is for Jinder, gives him a chance to show that he can be more in the ring than he showed against Randy. We'll see. Now, JBL, when he got the belt, people were like, whoa, the APA guy with the long hair? Are you kidding me? He's not a world champion. And he wasn't a really big drawing champion, but it was in a downtime for SmackDown and WWE. And so sometimes you're the victim of that a little bit. But he is somebody who's looked back on as filling TV time with some pretty good promos and having some pretty good pay-per-view matches, better than people expected, with a wide array of opponents. So maybe Jinder has that in him. I mean, he doesn't have the in-ring experience of JBL. He's not the worker that JBL was at that point. But I'm hoping. I talked about some other aspects of this earlier for first 8 minutes of the Wade Keller Hotline when I was reviewing a variety of aspects of Jinder's win. That was available to VIP members mid-afternoon today. So you can hear some other thoughts. I'm trying not to overlap too much on my thoughts, but I have talked at length with a wrestler earlier today about the Jinder push and the Jinder match with Orton and stuff. So I'm kind of adding some thoughts that got jarred when I was talking to him about this. So anyway, that's where that stands. Sam, I appreciate the call. We are due for another break. So let me get our third break here in, and when we come back, more of your calls. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. All right, we're back. I'm Wade Keller, and this is the PW Torch Livecast. Let's get right back to the phone calls, and let's go to Jason from Australia, the star of last Friday's Livecast. Jason, welcome to Monday night.
Yeah, thanks, Wade, and welcome to Tuesday morning. Now, it's your birthday, isn't it? What are you, happy 35th birthday, mate?
I was waiting for somebody to say that, and you are the winner. Thank you. I'm disappointed.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm disappointed.
And 35, you are 35, aren't you?
Yeah, we'll stick with that. Although then I think I look maybe a little old for my age, so maybe I should own up to it. But no, I appreciate the birthday wishes.
No problem. Hey, star, that's quite a big thing to say. I don't think star, just maybe, I don't know, a speck, an asteroid or something, but I don't know if I'm a star.
What do you think after Raw tonight? What's on your mind?
All right, well, just in relation to what they're saying about Finn Balor, I think they are foreshadowing that it is going to be Balor versus Lesnar at the next pay-per-view. I mean, you have Heyman approaching Balor. Now, I want to get your opinion on this. Do you subscribe to the theory that Balor versus Lesnar is not a believable matchup because when you look at both of them, Lesnar should destroy him? Do you subscribe to that theory?
I don't. And I don't because I've seen way too many matches where there's a big size discrepancy, and because of the way the smaller guy wrestles and because he gives off the vibe of being tough, that it works. Now, it doesn't work for everybody in a size matchup like that, but you either have to be, you know, quick or sneaky or, you know, mega athletic and come at the bigger guy from all kinds of directions, or you have to have really strong mat work and martial arts and look intense and strong in your offense. Finn Balor is kind of all of that. A very, very different size differential matchup that I grew up watching was Mad Dog Vachon against Crusher Jerry Blackwell. And, you know, Blackwell was 400-plus pounds, and Mad Dog was not super tall. He was at the tail end of his career, but still really effective at what he did. And I bought it. I never thought, oh, Mad Dog's too small, because Mad Dog raked his eyes and scratched his back and rubbed his face against the top rope as a baby face, but I was cheering as a kid like crazy, because Crusher Blackwell was my number one heel for me. He was, like, one of my favorite. When people say, who's your all-time favorite wrestler? Looking back, Jerry Blackwell and Mad Dog Vachon are two of them. Boy, did they draw me into the business and draw me into their matches. Now, very different stylistically. Blackwell and Lesnar, not similar in styles, and Mad Dog and Balor, almost polar opposites. But my point in saying that is I've seen a lot of effective big size differentials, and no, it can absolutely work. The key is, and this is why AJ works as a smaller guy and other guys his size haven't, AJ looks like he is, if you hit him He's going to be the first guy to his feet. He's going to shake it off, and he's going to hit you with something, no matter how big you are, that's going to hurt more than just about anybody on the planet. And Balor isn't quite at AJ's level in that respect, but he's in that ballpark. So, and Balor's a world-class worker. I mean, he has been in so many great matches that against such a wide array of opponents. I just think he and Lesnar, and by the way, Paul Heyman, can come up with a great match. I'm still not sold that's going to be the match. I think they showed their hand a little too much, almost as if it was building up Balor, but not... to me, I don't think they want to give away Balor's winning. And so I think next week we're going to get a swerve in another direction. And I'm not ready to put my money down on anyone yet, other than I don't think it'll be Reigns or Seth. And I'm leaning towards Bray or Balor, but I'm leaning a little more towards Bray, even with the Heyman promo.
My answer to that, the people say that Balor versus Lesnar is not believable, is that Brock Lesnar versus anyone is not believable. So what do you
that's
want?
That's a good point.
You know, it's pro wrestling. You know, and let's face it, Big Show at his size could squash anyone that he wanted to, really. Let's be realistic about this. I mean, there's 45,000 things you can point out in pro wrestling that's not realistic. So I think people are sort of clutching at straws there.
That's a great point. I mean, I think people, yeah. Jason, are selective in what they think is disqualifying their suspension of disbelief. But the fact is there's so much suspension of disbelief going on in every single match that deciding that you can't tell a great story with Balor and Lesnar, it's just arbitrary if you decide that.
And I think that can tell a believable match. I mean, all you have to do is watch the match that CM Punk had with Brock Lesnar. And even though Lesnar won that, I thought CM Punk came out looking like $1 million. Like, that was a great SummerSlam match. And Balor can have that type of match of Lesnar too. What I don't understand, though, is what I'm hearing from Reigns and Ambrose, and they say that, well, Lesnar doesn't want to do this, or Lesnar doesn't want to do that. And if I'm Vince McMahon, I go to Brock Lesnar and say, listen, we've got this Finn Balor. He's going to be a big star. We want him to push you in this match. You're going to win, but we want you to sell it like when you're clutching that title at the end after you've won, you just had a hell of a fight, and you weren't expecting it from this so-called little guy. We need you to sell that. We need you to give him offense. Go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
Why can't Vince McMahon just say that? I don't understand what Ambrose and Reigns are saying. Well, Lesnar doesn't want to do this. Lesnar doesn't want to do that. Lesnar's getting paid handsomely, very handsomely, with limited dates, to do what his boss tells him to do. I don't know where they're coming from there.
I think if Vince objected strongly, that he would assert himself. But I also think there's a certain amount of FU walk-away leverage that Brock has that Vince knows he has. And I think there's a little bit of Vince McMahon that kind of respects and gets off on Lesnar being a little bit of a little stubborn and a little asserting his authority, because ultimately when it comes down to it, Lesnar will do what Vince tells him. But I think Vince kind of picks his spots for how involved and micromanaging he gets in certain situations. And the fact is Vince didn't love Ambrose and Lesnar as a match. It was just, he was kind of the last man standing when it came to options for Brock. And I don't think Vince loved it. And I think he just said, yeah, go work it out. With Reigns and Lesnar, I mean, Vince made sure that went a way that made Reigns look good. But Reigns didn't sound like Dean when he talked about that match with Jericho on his podcast. He didn't say, oh, Brock was, like Dean is kind of bitter about it. Reigns was just like, in the end, I got what I needed and it worked out. But, it's when you're working with Brock, it's a negotiation and you got to sell him on some things and all that. But in the end, I mean, that match helped make Roman Reigns. So I don't think Reigns has any bitterness over it. And the fact is, as Reigns said, Brock's earned it by being a UFC champion and what he's done in WWE in two stints. So, again, each situation's different, but it's part of... I think Paul Heyman respects Finn Balor, and I think Paul Heyman will let Dean Ambrose know this guy... Excuse me, that he'll let Brock Lesnar know this guy deserves our respect, let's work with him. With Dean, I'm not sure that Paul was sold on Dean being a guy who he wanted his beast selling for and turning into $1 million. It's just, Paul's got big influence in that category too. But you're right. In the end, if Vince wants to assert himself, he can and he will because he writes the checks. But Vince picks his spots with people like Lesnar.
All right. I just want to circle back then to Backlash. You're talking about Randy Orton, right? See, I thought Orton's the perfect role that he was in to me was when he was tag-teaming with Luke Harper and they were feuding with American Alpha. See, I think Orton would be really good in the tag-team title situation where a young up-and-coming guy can get the rub off him, and the tag team they're working against Randy Orton, since he's a big star, they also benefited. Like American Alpha getting the pin on Orton, I thought would have done a lot for them. Obviously, they've fallen down by the wayside, but in theory, I like Orton at this stage of his career. You know, I know it's probably against his character to go out and pick a young talent because he's not that type of character, but just to associate someone with Orton in a tag team situation versus the SmackDown tag titles, and it's like, well, you know, there's a big star in the middle of the card who's someone we can get behind. So I like Orton in that situation. In relation to Nakamura, though, listen, I've listened to what people are about to say, and I've got a theory on Nakamura. I want to see if you agree with me on this.
Yeah.
I believe Nakamura loses a lot of steam and a lot of part of his act when he sells. Now, I know that, and it sells too much. Now, I know baby faces, we hear it, they have to sell to get sympathy, but there are certain acts that I don't like to see them sell too much. Lesnar, to me, loses a bit. Goldberg loses a bit when he sells too much. I put Nakamura in that category. He is that cool Japanese guy that goes in there and destroys everyone. He's like Bruce Lee. And the only time that you can get him down is in a 2-on-1 or 3-on-1 mugging situation. Everybody should be afraid to face Nakamura in a 1-on-1 situation. When he sells too much, I don't feel sympathy for him. I feel like he's not cool anymore. Zayn, Bryan, Ambrose, Rollins, these type of guys, I feel sympathy. I find it hard to get sympathy for Nakamura because that's not what he's appealing to me. What's appealing to me about him, he's a cool guy that kicks ass. And when he sells too much, he loses a bit of steam.
I agree. I absolutely disagree with what they did with him with Dolph Ziggler on Sunday. That should have been 4 to 6 minutes, and Nakamura should have dominated. Ziggler maybe with an eye rake or a low kick or a cheap shot to the knee.
Jumping from the beginning. Cheap shot. You know when Nakamura does that pose where he goes on his knees? Has Ziggler stomp on him, cut the whole thing short, and then Nakamura recovers, and that's it. Game over. Have something like that. He loses too much steam when he sells. He's not cool anymore. I don't want to feel sympathy for him. I want him just to go in there and destroy people.
Well, and I'm fine with him selling if he's in a main event pay-per-view match against Brock Lesnar or AJ Styles or Roman Reigns. But I'm with you. I mean, I just don't think Vince is there yet. And it might end up being too late by the time if Vince ever kind of figures him out. But I was not encouraged. I mean, it was an okay match. It was a good match. You know, Dolph can have a good match. Shinsuke can have a good match, and they had a good match, and it was just that. And it was forgettable, and it defined Nakamura down, and it did not get my vote. I said before the match took place, I made my case on the Bruce Mitchell audio show with VIP members over the weekend. Don't let it be a long match. This is the first time a lot of people are seeing Shinsuke, and I vote for what you said, Jason, over what they did, and I feel strongly about that. And you're right.
I think people should fear taking him on one-on-one. Like that, you know, Bruce Lee, whenever he faced someone one-on-one, you know, he pretty much beat him up. Okay, he had some big battles towards the end, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Chuck Norris, you know, even Steven, but throughout, he dominated. And that's how I see Shinsuke Nakamura. Not to make the Japanese stereotype, but like I said before, the cool Japanese guy who goes in there and cleans house, I think that appeals to all cultures. And just one more point. Now that they have Jim Ross, you know, under the WWE banner again, I thought it would have been perfect for Nakamura's first words to be in a backstage interview, a sit-down interview with Jim Ross. You know, like when Jim Ross did those interviews with Goldust and Mankind in 97 and really brought another dimension to their character. You know, Jim Ross could say, you know, I've been in the business for 40 years. I've never come across someone who's just got so much star quality and ability, and he just captures your imagination. And folks, this man right here has it all. So instantly creating that credibility with Nakamura. Nakamura's in a sit-down situation, can talk, Ross can lead him. I thought that would have been great as the first introduction to his spoken words, as opposed to going against Ziggler, and Ziggler's trying to, you know, reel off these one-liners, which don't do anything for anybody. I'd really like to see Jim Ross utilized in that situation.
Yeah, I like that, especially with Jim Ross calling the Access TV shows and New Japan. I mean, he could not overtly plug what he did, but just say, hey, I've been, you know, watching a lot more Japanese wrestling than I have been. This guy's a megastar. Fans, you're in for a treat when you see him, and give him the full-throated endorsement. Yeah, I agree. That'd be a way to kind of transfer some of that credibility that Ross has for that type of wrestling and, you know, give him that stamp of approval for the fans who aren't sure what they're getting. I am still clinging to Shinsuke as bulletproof, and he's going to find a way to get over, even if Vince doesn't believe in him or frame him right. But, you know, after Sunday, I'm a little more nervous than I wish I was about it.
All right, well, I'll let you get to other callers. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Thanks, Jason. Appreciate your call. All right, let's go to Jimmy in New Jersey. Welcome back to the livecast, Jimmy. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, Wade, how are you? I'd be remiss not to say happy birthday, at least.
Thanks. Yes, you'd be in trouble if you didn't at this point, now that Jason has has established what an important day it is in the world.
Absolutely. So I just have a comment on the Broken Hardy gimmick. I don't know if you read the report, I forgot if it was the TNA president or somebody
Impact,
in the TNA higher-ups, how they... Okay, so I am actually kind of, you know, when the Dudley Boys came back, that was such, I mean, to be honest, at that point, that was one of the biggest, you know, shock surprises with no type of, you know, dirt sheet reporting on it before it happened, that it was such a surprise. And a lot of people can say that, you know, I think they kind of flounder that opportunity, and the Dudley Boys fit in that role of putting over young stars. I feel like they could have done a lot with it. And, you know, Bully Ray went on to say that Bubba Ray went on to say that he, you know, there were talks about the Bully Ray character, but now with the Hardy Boys being brought in, do you think that they may, I mean, although they got a main spot at WrestleMania and they're the champions right now, do you see the WWE actually, do you believe the reports of the broken gimmick never actually coming to fruition? Do you think that the Hardys can, you know, maybe actually transcend the tag team division or help it or do something really crazy? How do you see this playing out for however long they're here for?
Yeah, I think the new information that came out, and I reported on it in the afternoon Wade Keller Hotline earlier today and read those key quotes. I think I'm taking a little bit of a wait-and-see attitude because I want to see if anything comes out of the Hardys camp in terms of the assertion by Nordholm that the WWE is not interested in the gimmick and that, I mean, you know, Todd Martin, who's a lawyer, he does the Fix with Todd Martin midweeks with me for VIP members. He just said, "Hey, Hardys don't have a right to this." You know, it's and other people backed it up and emailed and said, "Hey, when you work for a company and something gets created, 3M got, you know, 3M would do this. Say 3M, a Minnesota-based company. I grew up hearing about this. You know, the inventions, whether it was Post-it notes or Scotch tape or whatever." You're paid to come up with ideas, and then if you leave the company, you don't get to take the copyright or the trademark or the patent with you. You know, you've got to that travels that doesn't travel with you when you leave, and that is Ed Nordholm's reaction. He's like, "This isn't even a legal dispute. We own this." Now, I've heard from people around the Hardys just going, no, the Hardys have expressed confidence that they've got some leverage, there's some exception to the typical rule, either because they weren't paid or there was a verbal agreement that people can testify to. I just haven't seen it play out. The newsy aspect of this is the claim that WWE has said they're not interested. So maybe the Hardys are going to remain, quote, just a nostalgia act, or maybe they'll reinvent themselves in a way that's different than Broken Matt, because Matt's creative and probably could come up with something that maybe, you know, he can sell Vince McMahon on that isn't a copy or a derivative version of what they did in Impact. So the news is fresh enough. I'm not, Jimmy, I just don't have a firm, solid response on whether there's going to be disputing some of the things that Nordholm said from the Hardys yet, but certainly I'll be covering it as I hear more.
Yeah, I mean, you could look to Twitter, and Revy has been very open ever since that interview. I don't know if you've been following her Twitter feed, but there's about 20 responses from other people regarding that the interview, you know, it was false. One tweet says, "Guys, giving an interview to your own network while lying through your teeth is now considered news." Matt Hardy himself retweeted Ryan Satin, who said, "Safe to say Ed Nordholm wasn't being fully honest while talking about Matt Hardy and the Broken Universe trademark." He said, "Accurate." And then the other piece of this that I find interesting is I watched an interview with Matt Hardy that, you know, was, I literally watched the video of him saying it, that he basically, in a roundabout way, admitted that they are in talks of doing it. Because when the interviewer brought up, what would you like to do, hypothetically, with the broken gimmick, and he brought up, you know, working with Bray Wyatt, and he said, you know, we already have some things working, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the broken universe, but I don't know, I just feel like at this point, with the Lee chants and the way Matt Hardy has been integrating, you know, that broken persona while simultaneously utilizing his older persona, I don't know if I'm naive, but I'm fully expecting something to come out of this.
And you know, even Dutch Mantel, you know, on Twitter said, you know, thanks for clearing it up. We 100% own the gimmick. I mean, it sounds like they're in for a fight, but I need to hear more. If there's leverage that the Hardys have, and I've heard they think they have it, and clearly on Twitter they think they have it, I need to find out, is there some foundation to that? I mean, it does seem like a battle of wills, but is it a battle of law? And if the Hardys and Rebby have talked them, because, and I thought Nordholm was interesting for him to say, and I can't remember the exact words, but the way that the Hardy camp reacted wasn't all that productive, and Rebby Hardy can be a hothead. I mean, I don't think she helps bring people to the table wanting to find a reasonable compromise. You know, she can't really, you know, help herself, and I mean, it's admirable in a way, because you know where she stands. You never, what, Matt did a live cast interview with me once, and she was in the background, because, you know, she's just yelling in the background while we're live on the air, saying, I've been waiting around a half hour. This is supposed to go shorter. Get off the phone. Like, just Matt's laughing nervously. I better go. So, I mean, but the thing is I'm not going to take Rebby on Twitter as, of course, you know, I mean, it's just like, that's not enough for me to know if there's something going on here. For Ed Nordholm to go on record and say the things that he said, to say that they're not the whole truth, well, that I believe. Because I'm sure there's other aspects to this that he didn't bring up because it doesn't suit his case. The question is, were there relevant key inaccuracies in what he said? Not did he volunteer all details, including those that compromise his argument. Well, I don't expect him to do that. That's not his job. But is there something he said that's just patently untrue? And that I haven't heard is the case yet. And Dutch Mantel, I don't think, would vouch for it. Maybe he's not in the loop either on the legal stuff, but I don't think he would vouch for it if they own it 100%, if he did, he's a smart guy and he's been around a lot. So, and I put faith in, you know, in his words too. So yeah, it's too early for me to kind of work through the weeds of what all the sides are saying. I want to hear from Matt's camp, not in a public posturing stance, but in a more sober environment. Where are they now? And I just haven't heard that.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, that was mostly my comment. I'll pose this question. You can go to next callers. But in regards to that, do you think Vince McMahon would properly utilize that gimmick? And do you think it has a life on the current WWE product?
You know, it's Vince McMahon. I mean, how can you say anything with confidence? He's pushing Jinder Mahal and burying Shinsuke Nakamura. And he doesn't even know he's burying Shinsuke Nakamura.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, who knows? But, I mean, I've followed him, you know, from the, you know, rise to the first WrestleMania onward, and covered him for the vast majority of those years professionally. And I mean, I'm surprised by him a lot, but I kind of have a sense of what clicks with him. And I think broken Matt Hardy is a little obtuse. I think that, you know, Stephanie McMahon didn't get Matt Hardy version 2. You know, like that baffled her. Like, well, why are you putting these facts on the screen? Why would anyone care what you, if you, when you, put when you play pool that you always like to have your back to the bar, like why do we need to know that, you know, like why do I care if you like your ketchup bottles tipped upside down, like, and she doesn't get it. It's just this abstract sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know that I've seen a history of Vince getting that kind of gimmick. But that said, if he thinks that there's a following and he can make money with it and it can do merch money, and there's somebody on creative who says, Vince, I can make this work, let's give it a shot, you know, I'm not saying that they wouldn't give it a shot. I mean, we're watching the Fashion Files, you know, on SmackDown each week. Could Vince greenlight something along those lines for Broken Matt? Sure. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out. But I don't think it's something he's instantly going to gravitate towards. But I think if trusted people told him this can sell merch and trust us, it's quirky, but it'll work. I don't think it's a type of thing that he'd say it goes so against his philosophy and vision that he'd say no.
Yeah, I agree. And I also think it has to do with how much he would allow input from Matt Hardy, because I think that Matt Hardy would be not the only person to properly execute it, but obviously what he was doing was working, and it's a matter of if Vince can put his ego aside to agree that Matt can make this work. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I'm skeptical myself.
Yep.
All right. Well, thank you, Wade. I hope you have a good birthday.
Thanks. Appreciate it. We're down to just a few minutes, but so far, so good. Appreciate it. Thanks, Jimmy.
Okay.
You bet.
All you're
right.
Welcome.
Let's go next to Kenny in Mobile, Alabama. Kenny, you're up next. Kenny, are you there?
How are you?
Oh, hey, there you are. What's up, Kenny?
Yeah, Wade. Hey, Wade, how's it going? Happy birthday.
Thank you.
I just want to get one quick question, and I work right now, so I could take your answer off the air. But I was wondering what you thought of Bray Wyatt's opening promo tonight. He seems to be doing a little bit better on his promos. They seem to make a little bit more sense. I really enjoyed it. I thought it came off really well. I just want to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I'm still not crazy about his maniacal laugh. It just feels a little community theater to me. But I'm with you in that I felt like the, you know, talking about the beast and telling people to stand and that, you know, that in his world there are no friends, there are only followers. And I felt like his platitudes were more grounded in playing mind games with his opponents. And with a fatal five-way, he's got four guys that he kind of wants to turn on each other. And I thought that the promo served that purpose well, to put himself in kind of the alpha male position and said that at Extreme Rules he'll make them all suffer. And almost making a pitch, like, I alone can protect you. It was almost like he was, you know, making a pitch to them that if you don't follow me, I'll make you suffer. So, I mean, I think you can kind of, not deconstruct his promo, but you know, just on the surface level, look at the promo as, all right, he's trying to mess with people's heads, play some psychological head games with them to throw them off their game while talking himself up. So, yeah, I mean, on that level, it worked. He wasn't just talking about, you know, just nonsense. There are demons who will be shifting underground, and they will create a dust storm of chaos. It wasn't like just nonsense. So it was, yeah, I mean, it's a step above some of the other stuff he's done. But it still strayed a little bit into community theater for me with him, and that's just tough. I don't know if he can get away from that.
Yeah, I guess. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else, Kenny? You're a little muffled on your sound.
I'm sorry about that. No, man, last week's promo he did was really well. And I understand I could come off a little bit like the air a little bit, but I've enjoyed it. He's one of my favorites right now. I really kind of hope he wins that Fatal 5-Way and places Brock. Because like you said, I think if Brock's going to, you know, beat somebody, he's in a good position, you know, to be fed to Brock, because it wasn't really hurting. So I appreciate it, Wade.
Thanks, Kenny. Appreciate it. Yep, you bet. All right, let's see if we can fit in one or maybe two more calls here. Let's do another Kenny in Gallatin, Tennessee. Kenny. Kenny, welcome to the show.
Hey, Wade.
How you doing?
Hey, Wade. Thanks for taking my call. First of all, I'd like to say thank you for, belated happy birthday to you. I actually saw it on Twitter, and you had, like, balloons popping up everywhere. So, like everybody else, wish you a happy birthday.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
And I think Vince may have known it was your birthday, too, because he actually said, wow, we got to put it in a good Raw for Wade. And it certainly showed. I mean, the matches were pretty good. I want to get your thoughts on the Finn Balor singles match with Carl Anderson. Were you surprised that it was Carl Anderson going one-on-one with Finn Balor tonight?
Because of some background noise, Sean, I was trying to hear what you're saying. I couldn't quite pick up on it. Can you repeat it?
Well, I was just saying the opponent for Finn Balor tonight, it was Carl Anderson, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yes, Carl Anderson, yes.
Yeah, I was just wondering, were you surprised they went with him as far as a one-on-one match with Finn Balor?
Oh, okay. I'm gonna put you on hold. The background noise is rough. No. I mean, that's what Carl Anderson's used for. You know, I mean, he's a body who isn't going to tower over Balor as much as some others would. And he can, yeah, no, I know. I wasn't surprised. I mean, that's kind of the way that Carl Anderson has been used. You know, he loses in 7 minutes clean, but puts up a bit of a fight. He's a tag wrestler. So you get Balor a win over somebody with some name value. And I wasn't surprised by it at all. All right, up next, Cody from Thibodaux, Louisiana.
Hey, what's up, Wade? How's it going?
Not too bad. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. The second week in a row, I've been able to sit down and watch Raw. So I was pretty, it feels pretty good to actually get back into action.
Yeah.
Get to see everything. I thought tonight was an okay show. I really gotta get some thoughts out there because the writing on the show the past couple weeks has been really, really frustrating for me. I want to talk about the women's division, and I want to talk about Roman Reigns. I want to get your thoughts on those.
Sure. Yeah.
For the women's division, I thought this is WWE's chance to get some really good momentum with the women's division, especially after the superstar shakeup. Then you also got the upcoming women's tournament coming up soon. And, you know, for all their talk about touting, you know, the Divas, the women's revolution. And, you know, you got all these matches that you're putting them in. You know, we've seen a women's steel cage match. We've seen a women's table match. We've seen a false count anywhere Iron Man matches with the women on the roster, and with Extreme Rules coming up, the big question is, you know, can Bayley go extreme, or how extreme can Alyssa Bliss be? And I feel like they just really just dropped the ball on this one big time, because with all these matches that you're putting them in, they're going to try to sell us with a kendo stick on a pole match. Like a kendo stick on a pole match. And in my opinion, anything on a pole match is just groan inducing because the only thing I can think of, the only thing that comes to mind is actually from WCW. It's not even on a pole match. It's actually a Judy Bagwell on a forklift match. And that was painful to watch. And I think of that every time they introduce some kind of ridiculous something on a pole match. But I just feel like they really dropped the ball at this. And even just by going extreme, if they mean, oh, I can hit someone with the kendo stick once, you know, that's not enough for me. Like, if Alexa Bliss wants to show Bayley how extreme she can get, like, why not just cane Mickie James like several times? Just, you know, beat the crap out of her or something. I don't know. But, I don't know. What did you think about the women's title match on Extreme Rules?
I don't have as much of a problem with it as you. I mean, when you do a pay-per-view called Extreme Rules, I'm kind of on principle against that, because then you just start having to force-feed a bunch of gimmick matches all at once. And I just philosophically believe that a gimmick match should be the result of a feud that is worth having a gimmick aspect to it at its culmination point, and that gimmick should have a purpose. And what ends up happening with Extreme Rules, and I think it's what's bothering you with this, is they start trying to figure out what kind of wide range of gimmicks can we do to fill 3 hours, where every match is a little bit different and the top matches feel special. And a kendo stick on a pole match, I mean, it's fine. I thought that showing the welts on Bayley's back was a good illustration of what a few shots can do. I mean, to me, they're doing what they can with the canvas that they've created for themselves, which is, we've got a show where we need a bunch of gimmick matches. And they don't have to. I mean, they could just have, you know, one main event that has Extreme Rules and a regular undercard. But I think they think there's some equity in seeing the women, that there's a chance the women are going to hit each other with a weapon that is going to hurt and leave welts and leave marks. And that's not usually the part of the women's action. But I don't think they want to go so far at this point in the feud by putting them in something even more extreme, you know, a tables match or you know, a cage match or something like that. So I don't know. I mean, it is what it is. It sounds like a cop-out answer, but I mean, they have Extreme Rules. They gotta have gimmick. They decide they want to have gimmicks in most of the matches, and on the face of it, a candlestick on a pole match doesn't bother me that much in the sense that they can have a regular match for a while before it turns into a match that involves a kendo stick, and then when they involve the kendo stick, it can lead to a pretty quick crescendo and finish.
You make a lot of sense, and I get your point. I think for me, though, it's just, you know, seeing, you know, watching all these different matches with the women, it seems like they're moving a lot of steps forward. I feel like a kendo stick on a pole match as opposed to, like, just a regular hardcore match just kind of seems like a step back for me. And it's not as much as about it being a gimmick match for me as it is about
90 seconds
to show how, you know, how wide or how wide their all their skill sets can be. But I mean, that's really just my opinion on it. And then for Roman Reigns tonight, I think I'm just in my opinion, I'm probably just fed up with how WWE is trying to book Roman Reigns. I think at this point they're not even trying to show us whether or not he's a babyface or a heel.
60 seconds.
One of the callers mentioned showing Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman from 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
From my point of view, watching that footage, it seemed like they were making Roman Reigns out to be the heel, because, you know, all he was doing was just going after that arm and just doing whatever he can to just really injure that arm of his. And then watching his match against Finn Balor, you know, there were a lot of tactics that he were using that I thought were really, you know, heelish moves. Like, for example, restarting the referee's 10 count to inflict more damage on the outside. Using the ring post for his drive-by kick, which when you really didn't need to. The Paul Heyman promo for Finn Balor, I thought was really disappointing, because it's not that I wouldn't mind seeing a match between Finn Balor and Brock Lesnar. I'm perfectly fine with that kind of match. But, you know, the night after WrestleMania, it was Paul Heyman that laid out a challenge for Roman Reigns. And that was over about a month and a half ago. And then now, you know, tonight, I'm saying, oh, if Roman Reigns can win the Fatal 5-Way match, and I'm thinking to myself, did you forget what happened like about a month and a half ago? Because, and it just seems like it's all confusing, and it's all very frustrating for me to watch. You mentioned, I think it was last week, you mentioned, you know, they need to have a sense of continuity, a sense of, remembering their history. And I think that the perfect example of them not doing that is, because Paul Heyman's not mentioning that he challenged Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns is not even challenging that he, you know, was challenged by Lesnar and Heyman. So I just really wanted to get that out. I don't know what you thought, but
I'll respond. I think that Cody, one of the issues is that Braun Strowman got hurt, and I think they just sort of had to improvise and do a Fatal 5-Way. And I mean, storyline wise, sometimes I think they feel the need to forget something or not draw attention to it and hope that most people aren't thinking about it, or even if they are, it's not going to... And I think they have this attitude too often, because I've heard this as a defense for Jinder Mahal. Well, you're still going to watch anyway. You know, even if Jinder Mahal's champion, you're still going to watch. There's still AJ and Kevin Owens and, you know, all those people, all those wrestlers you like. And I think they're just thinking, you're still going to watch, even if we forget that detail. And if there's a good reason to forget a detail... I mean, you got to do it sometimes. You know, I mean, if there's no other option and drawing attention to something is going to just take away from it, sometimes you got to forget. But don't do it a lot, and don't take advantage of it out of laziness or sloppiness. But when you have somebody like Braun Strowman get injured and you're trying to, you know, make it work, I mean, you know, there's going to be an audible called, and some things that maybe don't make sense because what they're doing right now was not part of the master plan. And they got to deal with that. All right. Don't forget, you can go VIP for $1 or take $9 off any subscription. A one-month subscription, normally $10, is $1 this week. Or you can take $9 off a three-month or one-year sub. the coupon code, the promo code, when you get to the sign-up form, it's right at the bottom as you're about to click click to complete the order. Enter May Dollar, M-A-Y for the month, and D-O-L-L-A-R for the price you're paying for 1 month. That's May Dollar, all one word, no space. And you can get a link to the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. pwtorch.com/govip. And I want to thank James Caldwell, former host of this Monday Night Raw wrap-up show, for just now, this second, wishing me a happy birthday. Thank you, James. He's usually the first one to wish me a happy birthday. And he was now one of the last. So thank you, James, for that and for all you did for the Torch over the years. And on that note, I will sign off for today and take you into some more details on our VIP membership. So here's some notes on what comes with the VIP membership. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our listeners. And until next time, here's Wade Keller. Don't forget, May Dollar is the coupon code. Here's some more details on VIP. If you're a fan of the PW Torch livecast, you might want to consider a PW Torch VIP membership. When you do that, you get access to an exclusive RSS feed of not only ad-free, plug-free versions of every single PW Torch livecast, but also over 50 other VIP exclusive podcasts per month, including the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline. I also host three other flagship VIP exclusive podcasts: The Midweek Fix with Todd Martin, The Weekend Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, each about 2 hours in length, and the post pay-per-view roundtables with the 1 hour analysis of every WWE pay-per-view and some other ones too. Also, ad-free access to pwtorchvip.com, and that is mobile-friendly and PC and desktop-friendly. And also access to almost three decades of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, dating back to the late 1980s, over 1,400 back issues, with my pay-per-view reports on every single pay-per-view match since the late 1980s, with star ratings and match descriptions, roundtable reviews from the staff on every pay-per-view, cover stories on the biggest story every single week in pro wrestling, march through them as a VIP member 1 week at a time, read our exclusive Torch Talks with pro wrestling's biggest names, hard-hitting editorials, backstage tidbits you will not hear anywhere else, and much more. It's all available. Check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Exclusive podcasts, exclusive new newsletters every week, ad-free access to our website, and access to 28-plus years of archives. It's all waiting for you if you go VIP. Find out more details, a checklist of all the benefits of being a VIP member, along with testimonials from current members and a sign-up form that's mobile-friendly. Takes about 90 seconds to sign up. Go check it out today, pwtorch.com/govip. Follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller. Follow our brands at PW Torch, at MMA Torch, and at PW Podcasts. You can catch up on what you missed on wrestler-hosted podcasts over at pwpodcasts.com. Get the latest on what's being said by wrestling personality-hosted podcasts with in-depth written reviews from our team of contributors, and also breaking news quotes. That's pwpodcast.com. Go check it out right now. See what it's all about. See what you're missing if you're not a regular, and make it a daily stop. I think you'll find some good reading material, some newsworthy quotes, and some good inside compelling stories from people who work in the business. And we've got it all summarized for you over at pwpodcasts.com. Until next time, Wade Keller thanking you and signing off.